Welcome to the Kerry Newhoff Leadership Podcast, a podcast all about leadership, change, and personal growth. The goal? To help you lead like never before in your church or in your business. And now, your host, Kerry Newhoff.
Well, hey, everybody, and welcome to episode 137 of the podcast. My name is Kerry Newhoff, and I hope our time together today helps you lead like never before. Well, if you are a subscriber, and if not, I hope you are, or become one today, you know that we're in the middle of a little mini-series. And so last week, my guest was Steve Fogg, who is now in England and working at a church there, but for the last number of years was in Melbourne, Australia, and really created a global ministry from scratch on a tight budget. I mean, it was just an amazing story. And if you're wondering, you know, where does our church fit online? You got to listen to last week's episode if you haven't done that already. But today it's part two of that mini series. And my guest is Justin Dean. He was the communications director at Mars Hill Church and now does his own thing. But if you remember what happened at Mars Hill Church in Seattle in 2014, Justin was on the podcast before. And if you go subscribers, you'll have this on your phone already. But if you go back to episode 79, that's where I first talked to Justin, and he talked all about what it was like in those final days and how he handled the crisis and what went down at Mars Hill as it shut down in 2014. Fascinating, honest, and I think really, in the end, very positive interview with Justin. So again, if you're a subscriber, you can just go back and find that. And remember too, guys, you can subscribe for free. That's what I do to all the podcasts I listen to. Anyway, Justin is back, and we have this fascinating conversation about church online and like what are its limits. So it's kind of a little bit meta, but hey, I think like that, and hopefully this will be helpful. And then again, if you subscribe, and if you haven't, there's one thing I would love you to do today. Just subscribe. Every podcast I end up listening to regularly, that's what I do. It's free, and you can then jump in on any episodes. They automatically download to your device. And so I subscribe to like 20 different podcasts and love it, love it, love it, love it. Next week, we are back. We're leaving the tech theme, and I'm back with Bob and Maria Goff. I talked to them as a couple. A lot of you know Bob from Love Does, and he speaks internationally. Just a most incredible guy. And his wife, Maria, just released a book called Love Lives Here. And so I actually sat down with the two of them and talked about their marriage and their life and how opposites attract. So that's coming up next week on the podcast. I'm really excited about that. Hey, before we jump into today's conversation, how's your church doing financially? Like, if you really look at it, is it going well? I know when I talk to a lot of leaders, one of the main problems they have is like, we just don't have any money for ministry. And frankly, I'm tired of broke churches. I don't know about you, but I think the kingdom of God should be the best funded venture on the planet, because I don't think there's anything more important. Well, if you want to figure out how to fund your church better, go to fullyfunded.cc. That's fullyfunded.cc. And there's a free course they'll give you on the best way to grow regular giving in your church. And so you can find that today at fullyfunded.cc. And also, I know a lot of you really try to help out your volunteers, and you know, you need more volunteers. The volunteers you have, they're not particularly well-trained. You try to do a training event, not everybody showed up. How do you solve that? Well, I would love for you to go to trainedup.org, trainedup.org, because they have got something for you. They can actually help you train all of your volunteers virtually. Now, I know sometimes, you know, if you have a very large church, you have the infrastructure for that. But I know churches of like, you know, 10 locations that are using Trained Up, because it's just easier to have somebody else do it than to build your own infrastructure. And that's exactly what they have done. So if you're interested, head on over to trainedup.org, and they are offering a 10% discount for life, for all of my listeners. So all you have to do if you sign up for trainedup.org is use the code Kerry, C-A-R-E-Y, at the sign up. You will get 10% off of that for life. That's kind of cool, isn't it? And thanks to those guys for making this podcast happen. I mean, the podcast will always be free to you, and you know that, so subscribing doesn't come at any cost, but it has costs, and so they help underwrite this so you can get this in your inbox every single Tuesday and have great conversations. And I love the fact that we're up to like 137 conversations, plus some bonus episodes, so I'm pumped for that. Also, one more note for podcast listeners. If you are passionate about reaching your maximum impact as a leader, I just want you to know the High Impact Leader course is coming back in May. That's right. So stay tuned. We'll have some details next week for you. But in May, the High Impact Leader Course, something that helped literally over 1,700 leaders in December and January alone, is opening back up in May. And if you want more information, just go to thehighimpactleader.com, thehighimpactleader.com, sign up for the waiting list, and then you will be the first to find out what this productivity course is about and how it can help you. And I'm so excited to get it into the hands of more leaders. So it's going to be available the first week of May. And the way to not miss it is to get on the waiting list at thehighimpactleader.com. So anyway, here is my conversation with Justin Dean. Well, Justin, welcome back to the podcast. It's good to have you, man.
Yeah, thanks, Kerry. Thanks for having me back. I love what you're doing. You have two podcasts now, I hear, right?
I do. That is the rumor, and it is true. We have this one, and then there's a little baby Canadian Church Leaders podcast that is gaining a bit of momentum every month, so we're pretty excited. And you can listen if you're an American. You're allowed. Did you know that?
I wasn't sure. I didn't know if it would block access to me or anything like that. So
currently, there's no wall between our countries. So as long as that is the case, you will be able to access that podcast. So I'm excited about
that one.
You kind of did. I'm sorry. It was the Canadian like thing. So, and I'd like to keep it that way. I actually like an open border with you guys. You guys are good friends. So.
Oh, sure. Yeah. North, going north, we're fine.
Yeah. So last time we talked, because you were on the podcast about 18 months after, almost 2 years after Mars Hill sort of ended at the end of 2014, you were on in 2015. And a really, really great episode. We'll link to it in the show notes and so appreciate your transparency and, you know, a really honest conversation. But today we're switching gears because really at Mars Hill, you were communications director. You also ran their online campus and did a lot of their media interface, both social and with the media. You've really devoted your life to the digital space over the last few years. So I thought we'd talk about that. So let's start with that. I mean, hey, here we are in 2017, well into the year already. What are you seeing? What are you learning about churches online and what's working, what's not?
Yeah, I'll tell you, I'm going to be interested to hear what you have to say about this as well, too, because I think I'm going to take probably more of a negative route with my feedback. And I don't want to sound negative, but what I'm seeing is that most churches are still falling very much behind when it comes to embracing digital and, mm-hmm. and church online to help further the gospel. And I know you guys just started in the last year or so doing church online, and I provide you some feedback with that as well. And
yeah,
so I think there's exceptions to be sure. Like there's a handful of churches that are, you know, putting the resources and time into social media and websites and engaging with the media and doing church online well. I think the Rock Church in San Diego is one that's doing well in all those areas. Liquid Church in New Jersey. Mm-hmm. It's doing really well up there, but the majority of churches, they're still light years behind the secular world, at least. And I think that's a shame because the church should really be the one setting that example. You know, we should be the ones setting the culture, not adapting to it. And I think that's because we have the strongest brand of anything out there.
Well, this is a brand that will win at the end of the day when
when
everything else is dissolved, you've got the gospel in Jesus, right?
Exactly. We know it's going to last forever, but we're not doing anything about that. I feel like in general, you know, in general terms, we're doing basically the bare minimum that we can. I think churches just in general aren't taking bold steps anymore. They're too fearful. I was rereading one of my favorite books. It's so interesting. It's John Rotson. He wrote, "So You've Been Publicly Shamed," and it's a book.
I've never heard of that.
Oh, you've got to pick it up. It is so interesting. It's really, really good. And in there, he's got one of my favorite quotes that I've built a lot of what we're doing off of. And he says that we've created a world where the smartest way to survive is to be bland. And the whole book talks about public shaming and how people are scared to say or do anything or offend anybody anymore. And I think that describes the church in a lot of ways. We're too afraid to offend. We want to welcome everyone, black, white, gay, straight, conservative, liberal, and many churches are growing because of that. And I think that's great. Like, don't get me wrong. That's not where I'm going with this, but I think we're filling our churches with so many people from different perspectives and cultures, but for what? Like, what are we doing with that? I think a lot of churches, it stops right there. Like, how are we getting to know those people on a personal level, so that we can help them attack sins, that we can, you know, get to know them, so that we can, you know, help them become closer to God.
I wasn't sure where you were going with that. I hear what you're saying. Everybody is obviously welcome at a Christian church, and I think you and I believe that, but you're saying the goal is not to fill the building. The goal right. is to actually challenge all of us with the radical call of the gospel.
Exactly. Gotcha. And to help equip them to further the gospel as well. But instead, yeah. I see church after church is saying, okay, well, we need to not take a stance on anything, and we need to let everyone in the building. And then they have this building full of people, and then they promote their numbers. Hey, we're growing. We're huge. We're opening another campus because we have so many people that we can't fit them in this building. But for what? Like, what are you doing with those people? What are those people doing? You know, are half of them aren't even Christians, but they're coming because it's a cool show. And it's just really disheartening for me to see that, because you want to help grow the church, but in a way that actually helps people further the gospel. And I think the churches are just, they're trying to be too bland.
Gotcha.
It's too scary to get out there and do new things.
A lot of different thoughts in those opening comments, and I really appreciate that, Justin. One, I would say it's spending a lot of time on both sides of the border in the U.S. and in Canada, where I'm from and where we've done ministry. I would say from a Canadian perspective, I think the American church is far ahead of the Canadian church when it comes to the digital frontier in terms of online campuses, social media presence, all those things. And I don't really actually know too many Canadian churches that even have an online campus. And we'll talk about the pros and cons of that, because, you know, I told you my goal today was to ask you all my unresolved questions about the church online, the stuff I get asked when I speak. It's like, so what about church online? And I'm like, well, here's what I don't know. And I thought, oh, I'm just going to pick Justin's brain on this, and we'll try to figure it out. So I think you think the American church is behind. Well, I would just have to say, and again, in the absence of data, we don't have as much data on Canadian churches as you do on American churches, just because of the size of our population. It's a tenth of yours. But I would say, just eyeballing it, knowing a lot of churches across the country, the American church has way more of an online presence than Canadian church. And, you know, the thing that challenges me with that is everybody who's not in church is online today, period. Right. You know, I don't know what, you know, in internet coverage is in Canada and the US, but it's got to be 98% to 99%. Like, literally almost every single human being in our countries has a smartphone and has some kind of internet presence. Yeah, they're on Facebook. They're on social. They Google restaurants before they go anywhere. They research their car purchase before they buy it. You know, people are like that. And if the church isn't there, you're not on that space. And And I think in both countries, we probably have some catch up to do. And, you know, you also said something interesting, which I think probably tweaked in the mind of some leaders who are listening, the whole controversy part. I think you make a really good point that sometimes we're a little bit bland and we don't push people as much as we could. But I think one of the things people struggle with especially these days, and we're going to be, you know, broadcasting this several months after you and I record it, but it's early 2017, February, and I talk to a lot of people these days who say one of the problems with social media and the presence online is it's become so polarized in the current political environment. I mean, Democrats can't stand to listen to Republicans. Republicans can't stand to listen to Democrats, Christians and non-Christians. I mean, the tone has really become escalated and polemic and bitter and divisive. That's not what you're suggesting, that churches should get controversial online, is it? Or is that what you're suggesting?
No, I definitely don't think that we should get controversial. I mean, everything the church needs to do and Christians need to do needs to be done out of love in order to bring people together more, for sure. I think that a church shouldn't shy away from those issues, but it needs to be done in a certain way. And I think that what we found is a lot of churches, like you say, you know, America is so far ahead of the Canadian churches as far as getting online and things like that. Mm-hmm. And I think that's definitely true. But it doesn't mean that the American churches are doing it any better.
No, I would say you're probably right. Even what I see in American churches, it's behind business. I mean, business is further ahead than the churches. And that's an area we should be, I agree with you fully, that we should be cultural leaders. I think one of the things that shies people away from it maybe is the current highly politicized tone of debate online, where people just kind of throw up their hands and it's like, I'm not going to post anything, or I'm not going to respond, or I'm just done with it, right?
Yeah, I mean, you know, the church results to either getting into the fight, which I don't think is smart on social media, or they back away completely and they just post scripture with, you know, flowers behind it, and and that's it. And it's all automated, and it, you know, it's event this, scripture this, and it's just so bland that
the scripture with flowers behind it is not the key to an effective social media strategy. Is this what you're telling me, Justin?
That's exactly what I'm okay. I think there's real opportunity for them to actually get to know these people and understand their point of view, invite them to coffee, invite them to church, invite them into community, because that's where you're really going to get to know people and be able to make an impact and make a difference. And churches just aren't making that connection at all. They're just posting events. They're just posting graphics. Like, they are online, but they're not doing anything there, you know?
So that's the thing that we've, you know, sometimes talked about on this podcast, really, social media's announcements, right? It's not just announcements. So
just a billboard.
Now, you guys are all over the country these days because you work with that church conference. So you're connecting with some of the thought leaders in you know, the online community. Let's talk about best practices. So what are some more creative, more pioneering ways of interacting with churched and unchurched people online that you're seeing these days?
Well, I think, you know, one thing I'm seeing is if you look at what's popular outside of the church, so you look at what secular companies are doing, media companies are doing, the ones that are doing it well, the things that you're seeing in your Facebook feed a lot that are getting interaction, are like those tasty videos, the super high speed recipes.
Oh, yeah.
How to make a great lasagna that you're never going to actually make. But people stop scrolling to watch those. They're growing like gangbusters. That it's incredible, but it's that short form content. Like, we're so worried about getting our full sermon live online. For what reason? You know, just, I think it's a great way to get more people to see that sermon, but it's really not a great way to connect with those people at all. I see churches like Greg Laurie's doing these 1 minute or less videos on Instagram where he answers tough questions about faith. And it's just a recording of him, you know, done with the phone sometimes. And he puts it up there on Instagram. They're quick and easy to produce. And he answers some really, really great tough questions, and people are eating them up. I think there's a lot of room and potential there for him to even connect with those people and dig deeper and help them connect to community and church. Watermark Church in Texas, they do these real truth, real quick videos, and they're super short. They tackle some serious questions about politics, faith, sexuality, like pretty much anything. They're not, you know, they're willing to go there, and they do very well as well, because they show up in people's feeds and it's a quick little video that they can watch. Like, nobody's stopping scrolling to watch an hour live sermon unless they planning to do that anyway, you know?
Well, and I think that's a really good point. There's a distinction between your church and reaching them online. And obviously, if someone was away for the weekend skiing or at the beach or whatever, you know, wherever they were, they may want to catch up on the sermon that they know, but that is not a good first impression, or it's not a way to engage people who aren't looking for the message. And that's another thing that, you know, we have talked about at Kinexus, and I'm not sure we've really done anything about it, but it's just like, you pour so much time and energy into your sermon, and simply to archive it on a podcast or on your Facebook page or on your website so that people can come back and see the 1 hour or the 40-minute version or whatever. Is there any good measure of, like, just taking a short video clip, 60 seconds, and putting that on? You see the big churches do that, like Elevation does that, Life Church does it, others do it. Is that gaining traction? Do you think that's a good idea?
Absolutely. I think that's the way you go. We used to do that at Mars Hill. We definitely put the full sermon up on our website and point people there. But what did well is we would splice that up into 4 or 5 quick videos that were a few minutes each. We post them on Facebook. We post them on YouTube. And people would watch those and they'd share those. Nobody's going to share a full sermon with their friends and say, watch this, it's so great, because they know no one's going to do that.
Right.
But they will say, hey, check out what this pastor said about this. And they know that people will watch that in their feed because it's just, you know, a few minutes. So okay. I think taking the time to spice it up like that is a huge opportunity to get in front of people.
So there are churches who have departments, and like we do at Kinexus Church, where we could just say, you know, hey, we'll outsource this or slice up the message or give it to an intern or whatever. But what about the leader who like has a church of 100 people and, you know, the biggest technology they have in their church is their iPhone, which may be a 6 or a 7 or their latest Droid or whatever.
Yeah.
Do they just shooting a really quick 1 minute video and throwing it up on your Facebook or your Instagram? Is that still worth it for anybody? Okay.
Totally. I think so. Like there's something to be said for a well-produced video that your video team did, and they, you know, added a score to it, a nice little, your logo.
You got those subtitles, so if the audio isn't on, you can read it, right? Yeah, right.
That's all, that. Great.
Yeah.
Like that's a goal to get to, but I think that that can't be the fear of like let's not do anything because we don't have a big video team or the money to do that. You have the capability in your pocket. Pull out that iPhone or that Android. Open up the editing app and take 5 minutes to just record. It does, you know, if you don't have a video team who can edit the video of your sermon and spice it up, take your phone out, put it on a table, and then share for a minute about what your sermon was about and post that with a link to the full video later. For one, it's more candid and real and behind the scenes, and people are going to interact with that a lot more. They're going to see, you know, that you're a real person that wants to connect with them one-on-one. I think that's going to do really well in people's feeds.
Yeah. It's almost perceived as more authentic, isn't it, Justin, than, you know, the super produced or even the excerpt from whatever you did on Sunday. So people love that. I do Ask Me Anything's on Facebook, mostly for leaders these days. And people love that stuff. And it's crazy if you do a Facebook Live, you know, which really has replaced Periscope, I think. I think there's four people.
You've got to play into like Facebook is prioritizing Facebook Live and videos over anything else. So who knows if that will always be the case, but right now that's the case. So you got to play into that. Instead of just posting a video, try doing it live because you know it's going to reach more people that way. And there's some tools there to interact with people more in the comments and help it spread even further. My friend Stephen Dilla, he speaks at our conferences, and his firm Aspen Grove out of Colorado, they did all this research on how people engage with churches and particularly like how they engage with people doing church online.
Right.
What they found is that people convert to community before they convert to Christ.
Hmm.
And I love that because I think too often churches think that you can just hit people with the gospel and send them on their way and they'll be great Christians. But there's no personal connection there. You know, how are you actually helping these people to be known? They're watching your sermon online, but how are you actually connecting with them? You know, do you know anything about them, about these people watching your sermon? You know, why are they watching online? Why aren't they in a local church? Do they have any interaction with other Christians? Are they married? Are they divorced? Are they contemplating suicide or an abortion or something like that? You want to be able to connect with them in that way. And I think most churches are satisfied with just checking that box of like, okay, everyone says we need to be online, so we're going to do church online. Let's throw our sermons online. And then, you know, suddenly we're super relevant. And they may even hear like, oh, we need to actually engage with the people. So let's throw a chat box next to it, or let's throw a prayer request button, you know, and done. We checked off the box. Now we're a super cool church, but you're not actually engaging, getting to know those people. And I think there's ways for you to go deeper with that. You know, Facebook Live is definitely the next step with that.
Mm-hmm.
Not to just show your service live, because who cares if it's live or recorded?
You know,
when I want to watch it, but because you get to actually interact more with people, have people on standby to answer their questions and connect them to a community group or to a church.
What are some of the best forms? And one of the things I love about what you're saying is it's kind of universal. I mean, the cost of entry, Facebook Live is free, right?
Yeah.
Like it's free. And I mean, if you have a phone, everybody pretty much has a phone these days. So if you have Facebook on your phone, there's your cost of entry. You don't need a production department. You don't need lights. You don't need a camera because your phone is your camera. So let me ask you, in terms of engagement online, because that's a big debate. There's sort of the broadcast model, right? Mm-hmm. Which is just watch, and there's nowhere to really engage. And then there is the chat room engagement model, which I probably lean toward, even though it's awkward and even though only 5 or 10% of people who are watching actually ever engage, et cetera, et cetera. But what are some best practices in terms of engaging people online, and what does that look like?
Yeah, you know who's doing this really well is Saddleback Church. Jake Cranda is the online pastor down there in California with Rick Warren. And I believe that they have more people in small groups than they do going to church on Sunday. Wow. So they're a church of however many, you know, tens of thousands. But they have even more people who are part of a Saddleback community group. And I believe that that's mostly because what they do is they push people who are watching online, they push them into small groups.
Even before they push them into Sunday?
I think so, yeah.
Wow.
Like, so say you're watching the sermon from Wyoming, and there isn't a Saddleback church near you. So let's help them get connected with the other five people who are watching from Wyoming and connect them together in a small group, and they can watch the sermon online together. They can get to know people. They can get to know each other and live life together that way. And then hopefully let's connect them with a local church in that area as well, or maybe that becomes their church. Their small group is their church, and they're watching Rick Warren online. That's great. Like any church can do that if we're able to connect and see who's actually watching this video online, and instead of just throwing it up and saying, well, we hope you grow as a Christian and get connected with others, or come to our church if you're near us. But you throw it online and anybody in the world can watch your sermon. What that's a responsibility, I think, for you to help them connect with others, because that's what the church is about. Church isn't about even going to a building and watching the sermon and then going back home. That's not church. That's a movie.
Right.
Like, you know, like church is about connecting with each other and living in community. Like, you know, like we said, people connect with community before they even become a Christian and believe in Christ. So why aren't we pushing people to that instead of just sharing the gospel with them through a video?
So you can do that through comments on Facebook Live if that happens to be your platform. Churches that are doing online can actually have a little chat room. I guess that's it. Any other way to like directly have that kind of personal interaction where it's like, oh, it's Justin from Atlanta. Hey, yeah. Justin, as opposed to, hey, all of you, or hey, anybody, right. Or how do you get that kind of personal one-on-one connection? I mean, we have a contact form on our website, which gets used surprisingly frequently. We have a chat room. Like, what else?
Yeah. You know, I think there's definitely ways to really step into that. Like, if you're streaming your service through Facebook Live, you can click on people's profiles and you can see who's watching you. And you can say, hey, David from Atlanta. You know, welcome. If he hits that little heart button and throws a like in there, you can say, hey, David, thanks for liking this sermon. We hope you are enjoying this. We hope you can get connected into a community group. And in fact, in the chat, there's a link to join a community group now. Doing things like that. I think, you know, we need to feel the weight of this responsibility. Like when I was at Mars Hill, we got requests all the time to do a radio show or a TV show for Mark Driscoll. Mm-hmm. And we really heavily explored those options. And in fact, we even brought in a guy to help produce the messages in a way that made them easier to syndicate on TV. Like, you know, Mark stopped referencing things that would give away the date. And, you know, if he misspoke or wanted to say something differently, he would pause for a second and say it again so we could edit it better. And we changed camera angles, all stuff like that, because we were gearing towards being able to easily syndicate the message out. But we never really pulled the trigger on that, even though we were going in that direction, because to throw your sermon or your message up on a nationally syndicated radio show or a TV show, which is what we were exploring, that comes with a lot of responsibility to the people that are watching that. And we knew that people would hear the radio program and then start emailing us and calling in. Mm-hmm. We wanted to be able to actually engage with those people instead of just ignoring them or putting them into a funnel that gets a canned response.
Yeah, like the autoresponders, right?
Yeah. We wanted to engage with them. We wanted to pray with them. We wanted to connect them to a local church. We wanted to help them on a path to discipleship. And at the time, we couldn't handle that kind of volume yet, so we didn't pull the trigger. Even though we had the content produced and ready to go, what we wanted to do was build a team of staff and volunteers that could actually answer phones in a call center, when we know that the radio program goes live, okay, for the next hour, we've got a call center of people ready to go to answer those calls. We've got a theological response team that we can escalate tough questions to. Because for us, it wasn't about just getting a bigger audience. It wasn't, it wasn't about just getting more people watching the sermon, because we knew that we were already doing that on a very large scale. But who cares if your audience is bigger if you're not actually doing anything with it? And so I think sometimes it takes that extra responsibility to say, hey, we're, instead of putting funds over here, let's put funds over here to be able to support this better and engage with these people. And the technology is there now. Like that, you know, we're talking about radio and TV. This was only 2 years ago. That was before live video on social media was even a thing.
Yeah.
Like, the way that that's even evolved over the last year to be able to bring in multiple guests on Facebook Live is coming, to be able to, push out different messages and graphics and things like that, to be able to have a more produced show, even like that's all just coming in the last few months.
Yeah, it's really interesting. And I like what you're saying too, because I mean, everybody I think dreams of having a bigger audience at some, at some level, but by the same token, I think, it's what you said at the beginning. It's like filling up your building, which is random people. But I think the real key is to engage people. So let's say, let's speak to the small church leader. It's like, if you can engage 10 people on Facebook, like let's make it really small, 10 people, and they really engage and two or three of them stick, and you've got a church of 50 people, you just added almost 5% to your church, right? And it's that engagement that I think in the future church will generate growth even more than, I want a million people or nobody to watch this. Well, start with three.
When you do it online virtually, you already know so much more about those people than, say, the person walking into your church for the first time, sitting down and watching a sermon. You are so dependent on him shaking hands with one of your best leaders to be able to make a good connection, or him filling out that connect card, or, him taking that next step to go to the welcome room and shake hands with you there. But online, you can click and pretty much know everything about this person. You know what they ate yesterday, where they went, how many kids they have, if they're married or not, whether they're straight, gay, single, like it doesn't matter. You know, all of that is already kind of built in a profile for you. So you have kind of a head start.
You can
start.
See who you're reaching and what a good step might be for them, or what a good conversation would be with them. That's such a good point. I want to pull the camera back a little bit, Justin. And I want to ask, because more and more is moving online every day, more and more of our lives. I mean, on online banking, I had a weird thing. I actually called my bank and I thought, do you remember telephone banking? Did you ever have that in the US? Yeah. Yeah, that's like 20 years ago or whatever. Yeah. But, it's funny, like your whole life.
It was cutting edge at the time.
It was cutting edge. Yeah. That you didn't have to actually go to a bank. And I'm old enough to remember when tellers, like automatic tellers, people thought, oh, that'll be the end of banks. Right. So, I mean, so much of our life is online. And if you look at just the home screen of your phone, it's like a decade ago, none of this was possible. Right. It really wasn't. So I think inevitably more and more of discipleship is going to end up online. And even the frontier aspect, like evangelism, is going to end up online. So you can almost see it as online as a digital frontier for the gospel. But I think right now we live in an age, and this is probably my biggest question just as a leader, is that online is almost as much of an off-ramp as an on-ramp. So let me set up the question this way. All right, so if you start, and I know a lot of leaders who are afraid of this, if you start your online campus, people are going to stay home, you're going to see a drop in attendance, and the people who sat at the back and crossed their arms are going to sit at home, sort of in bed, and sort of watch, and then probably drift away. Is that a real risk? And is it a risk that we need to be worried about?
Yeah, it's definitely a risk. I mean, I think there needs to be that plan in place to connect with those people. I've been throwing around an idea that, someone else would probably run with, because it's just not something that I'm, want to get involved in right now. But the idea that's been bouncing around my head is kind of disrupting the model of a church plant. So, right now planning a church is super expensive, super hard. A lot of planning goes into that. I've been involved in six or seven church plants for Marshall and other churches and through Acts 29. And, you know, right now you've got to build a core group. You've got to get four or five heavy donors who are all in with your mission, who are going to help, you know, kickstart that or build some capital. You've got to rent some space. You got to do set up and tear down each week until you get a permanent space. A lot of that goes in, you know, it takes a year or two to even plan that before you start meeting in homes and then growing from there. That's if you don't have, you know, influx from a big church kind of sending you off.
Yeah.
But what if we flip that model, and what if we started online? Because the idea is eventually you start preaching each week, you build to a few hundred people, and then you put your sermons online, and you start reaching thousands of people and people get to know you. What if we started online? Because tomorrow, you know, I could start a church online by building a website, putting a camera in front of my face and preaching a sermon and putting it out online every week, and then promoting that to say, come watch my sermon each week online at my new church online. Where I think that breaks down is that's not a church. That's recorded video online. Mm-hmm. But I think that the potential there is to say, oh, okay, a week's gone by and I have 50 people watching each week from Sugar Hill, Georgia.
Yeah.
Okay, great. Let's get those people in Sugar Hill, Georgia connected so that they can start meeting in their own homes and watching the sermon together, praying, taking communion, getting to know each other, and really building that community. Before you know it, that group's 300, and now they have the funds to rent out a local high school, watch the sermon there. Maybe we build up a leader through a training program, and he's the local pastor of that church. Boom, now we've got a physical location that other people can come to. Okay, oh, we've got 50 people over here in Wyoming. Let's build a church there. And from there, you grow all your physical locations. I think that a model like that could work, and I haven't really seen anyone taking that approach yet, but it has to be built upon face-to-face, getting people face-to-face to get to know each other and build that community. Right. That's where they're going to grow.
See, that's interesting, because that was my next question. It was like, is anybody doing this? Because and you haven't seen it yet. But that makes a lot of sense. And again, you know, there may be lots of people who are like, well, I'm not even sure it would work. But you're not sure it's going to work until it does work, and then everybody will be doing it, right? Or nobody will be, right? Like, we don't know.
I think a few people have started, like, true church onlines in the past, and I think they've seen them fail because there wasn't that face-to-face connection. Like, that's not a church. You can't do church online in that way.
So let's go there, actually, because that's where the question was kind of going. Do you think we're ever going to get to a stage? And I mean, who can see more than 2 or 3 years ahead? I mean, only God sees the future, but, you know, and technology is changing so quickly. But what about the person who's like, you know what? So let's just play a scenario. I used to go to church. I used to attend regularly. I watch online now. That's what I do. Do you actually think there will be a digital substitute for the gathered church in the future? That actually plays the role that a healthy church would do. I mean, you know, some people, I'm sure we could point to somebody our parents or grandparents' age who would be like, TV was my church, right? I just watched all the TV preachers. Now, I would make the argument, are you really in a full relationship with Jesus? I'm not questioning your salvation, but like, have you done anything for the kingdom? Have you brought a single other person in? Are you connected with other believers? Or is this all about you and the fact that you don't want to get out of your lazy boy chair Sunday morning at 9 o'clock and go anywhere? Like, you know, but I can see with a digital interface, right? People are like, well, I do church. I listen to 3 messages a week. I watch live online on Sunday. I'm part of an online small group. And so that's my church. Like, do you think that would ever be a real substitute for the gathered church?
You know, I mean, I fear that it will be, but it's not going to be a real substitute in my mind. Mm-hmm. But I think sure it's possible. So I know people who watch church online. They even watch several church online from several churches, and then they're part of a virtual small group to where they all jump on Skype or Zoom and they see each other's faces and they connect. And these are people who are on the road. They travel a lot, or they're in different countries, and going to the same church every week on a Sunday is just not an option for them. So using technology, they're able to be a part of a community still, and they're able to get that, you know, teaching each week and feel connected to a body. I think in a way that, they're part of a church. They're part of a community. People know them, but it all depends on how deep they're going. Like, I think definitely being physically present with each other there's a lot to be said for that, but I don't think it's absolutely required. What if someone's imprisoned or on an island all by themselves? Can they go to church? You know, that's a weird example because why would they have internet? But still, I think that you can, as long as there's that connection with other people and they know the sin in your life, they can, they know when you don't show up, they know, what you're struggling with and can help point you to Jesus. Like that's all needed to be part of a church. And yeah, I think that that can all be done digitally, but I doubt that anyone is really doing that well. I just haven't seen that too well right now to say, hey, you don't even need to physically come here. I think right now, you need to physically go somewhere.
I tend to agree. You know, our mission, we're North Point Partner Church at Kinexus, is to lead people into a growing relationship with Jesus. And as we have that discussion around our table and I have the discussion with other church leaders, it's like, I have to figure out in my mind how a completely online existence as a Christian leads you into a growing relationship. And my experience with people who have said, no, online is my church, is that they tend to have a drifting relationship with Jesus, that they tend to be drifting further away, not leaning further in. And I'm not saying that that might not change. I know with virtual reality or augmented reality or whatever, but I don't know. I'm with you on that. Like I have a hard time because I know I do better in person. I pay more attention in person than I do online.
Yeah, I mean, they're like, you know, when we do workshops and stuff, one thing I teach is that proximity matters. Like when you're within range of someone and you can touch them and feel their presence and see their reactions, even through like a video platform, it's just not the same. Like that's definitely the ideal. You know, we need human connection. We're built for a community. We're built to be with other people in order to grow and get to know each other and connect. So I think that's super important. Like you can even have a perception of someone. And then when you actually talk to them on the phone or see them on a video or meet them in person, that perception can easily change just because you felt the warmth of their presence and became more human to you. You know what I mean? Like even this podcast we're doing over video, like I feel more like I know you, even though we've never met in person, because we're connected. I can see the expressions on your face when I talk, and that's super important to be able to make a good connection. And so you can't do without that. Like you can't just watch online and then go about your day and call yourself, part of the church. Like you're not.
So I think that's a good analogy. Like if you're just downloading content, you're listening on the road while you're driving. And let's take the outlier out of there. Let's take the person who is stuck on an island, right?
Sure.
And they can't accept. Yeah. Or, you know, some guy in some remote place in the middle of the desert that like lives by himself for some bizarre reason and isn't near anybody else. Okay, guess what? That's not 99% of us. 99% of us are within a 10-minute drive of a local church. 99% of us really do have people who live near us. And I think, it's funny. I was going to use this podcast as an example, too. It's an audio podcast, but I connect with video 99% of the time. Number one, I want to get to know my guests. Number two, facial expression is half of it. We tend to cut each other off less, and I tend to see where you're going or you see where I'm going. So you and I are having an interaction that the listeners won't have right now, but let me take it further. If we did this, I'm in Toronto, you're in Atlanta. If we did this in person, it would be different because we connected for 5 or 10 minutes before. We'll probably say goodbye at the end, but you know, we may have grabbed a burger or I would be at your house or you would actually be here in my office, in my studio. And we'd hang out for a little bit and we'd chat and it would be like, Justin, it's so good to meet you. There's just something about the way God designed us. You know, the way I always say it to my team is 20% of all people today or whatever the stat is, they meet online, but that never stays online. Like if you really fall in love with somebody, your goal isn't like, we've been married for 5 years, but we've never met, right? Your goal is to actually connect at some point and spend your actual real life together. And because Christianity is inherently relational, I tend to agree with you on that. So, and then many people would say, okay, great, Justin, thanks, Carrie, really great. So basically, I'm not going to have an online presence because you're right, it all has to happen in the building. What do you say to that? or the home or wherever.
I'd say that that might be a smart way to go. Like if you're just worried about getting your sermons online so people can watch them online, I think that sure, there's potential there that more people will see those sermons, and you don't want to limit God's potential to do something in their lives. But I think that that's just poor stewardship of that responsibility. I think it's so easy to be able to just plan that a bit and do it better that most churches just aren't even doing that. They're just so worried about getting online so they can have an online presence. And I don't think that's good enough. Like, that's great. 2 years ago, that was great. Let's just get it online. Hmm. Now I think there's so many tools, so many resources, so many ways to do this better that it's just too easy to not at least take, you know, one next step to connect with people individually through social media, through adding them to an email list, to getting people to answer the phone, getting people to comment back and engage with them in the chat or the, you know, Facebook live feed. Like, that doesn't take an army of people to be able to do that well. And just too many churches just aren't doing that. So I think, yeah, if you're not willing to go to that extra step, then yeah, stick with your building to where you can actually connect with people. And if you aren't connecting with people in your building, like I started this out, I think so many churches are just filling their building and not doing anything. They're preaching at them and sending them on their way. I think, yeah, you need to start there because those people are in front of you. Start with the people in front of you and actually try to connect with them, and then go to duplicate that online. And you can reach even more people with that model, but yeah, do it well in person first.
Yeah. And there is that relational aspect to it too. I think you're right. You know, social media is not, it's just not a bulletin board. It's just not a billboard. Yeah. You need to do more than that. And probably in terms of actual commitment of time, I mean, I would encourage leaders not to underestimate their online influence. You know, we talked about it before, but, you know, to start this podcast for very little money and to realize it's reached millions of leaders is pretty amazing. Like, you can do almost anything from where you are right now. And I don't hear from everybody, but we get email every day pretty much. And I meet tons of leaders, tons of you on the road. And you're like, this is really changing my life. Like, this is helping me. And it's great. Like, there are real people at the end of every download. Behind every download, there's real people. And you have to think about that in the church world as well.
Well, and that's, you know, I see you when people make comments. I see you reply to them.
Oh, yeah.
Try to engage it, like you personally. And I love that. When someone, I know I see it because when people will repost the first podcast I did with you, they'll, you know, tag me in it. And I see you reply to each and every one. And, you know, whether that's your assistant or you, like someone is making.
On Twitter, it's me. On Facebook, we have a team. And no, on Twitter these days, it's me. And you can, you know what? People think you're on social media all the time. No, I only spend less than an hour a day on it. Like, it doesn't take much to go like a tweet or to say, hey, thanks so much. I hope it was helpful, right? Or I really appreciate you, Justin. Thank you for all you're doing. That takes nothing, and it makes a difference for people.
I hate the time argument, because how often are we sitting for an hour before our plane takes off? How often are we sitting watching TV doing nothing? Like, it's all just a prioritization, you know.
Yeah, it is
time and figure it out, but it doesn't take that long. It takes 2 minutes here and there. It's, you don't even have to blog off an hour to do it. You know, it's just in between things, take 2 minutes to reply to two comments on Facebook and be done.
So let me ask you a couple of other questions before we wrap up. The dangers of online ministry, we've covered a few already, right? And I think what I hear you saying is you could end up in no man's land where you're online, but not really, or worse, you're fooling yourself into thinking that you have this awesome online ministry when really you just have an announcement service and, you know, scripture with flowers behind it, right? Or whatever, which I'm not saying, hey, that might help some people, but are you really going to reach people? But what are some dangers of online ministry?
I think one of the biggest dangers, I mean, besides just not connecting with people, I think is it becomes all about you. Becomes all about your mega reach and how many likes you get and how many you know, people are watching your videos. And it can easily become all about the numbers and not the people behind the numbers. And I see so many churches just, you know, promoting their numbers, but then you ask them, okay, well, great, how many of those people got baptized? How many of those people are going to church? Do you know anything about those people? How many of them are married? How many of them are women? How many, you know, they don't know anything about them. They just
know, keeps them up at night? What?
Yeah. Yeah. They just know 100,000 people watch our sermon each week. That's great. Like, you know, more power to you. That's 100,000 people that you're reaching, hopefully with a gospel message. And I think that's step one. Like that's right. That's great. That's 5 years ago. We've been doing that for a while now. Now, what are you doing to actually know it, even a quarter of those 100,000 people? And the tools are there now to be able to do that. So I think the danger is that so many churches are just doing it, and churches are copying each other, and no one's really doing it super well on copying that. We need churches to step up and say, okay, we're going to move to the next level, and we need them to do it quicker. We need them to be faster with that, so that more churches will catch on, because we're always just kind of 10 years behind. And then Canada's 10 years behind that.
Right. So we're even further behind. And I love you, Canada. I really do. It's just, we got some work to do, guys. So, we've spoken to the person with no budget, no staff, right? Basically, start with your phone. Cost of entry is zero once you have a phone. But let's speak to churches with resources. Let's assume you've got a department. Let's say you've got like thousands, tens of thousands, 100 watching online, because we have some big churches that listen. What should they be doing? Like, do you actually assign a staff person to be a pastor and to commit to actually really engaging and tracking and studying? Like, do you do that?
Yeah, why not? I mean, for one, someone with a pastoral role should definitely be overseeing this at some level, because these are real people you're reaching. They're not just numbers, they're not just viewers, they're real people. So a pastor should be caring for these real people. And honestly, if you're doing anything well, when you put your sermons online, chances are that viewership is going to grow way bigger than your pulpit and your building is going to be able to hold. Like, you can only build buildings so big, you can only have so many buildings, but online you've got billions of people who technically have access to watch this. And so that's your biggest audience. I think it needs to be, we need to treat it as not the secondary audience, little side project we do, but as the biggest potential to reach the most people. Because if you're limiting yourself to how many buildings you can build, that's just going to go so slow, and you're only going to reach your local community, which there's a purpose for that and you should do that. But by putting this stuff online and actually paying attention to online and putting the priority there, you can reach millions. You can reach hundreds of thousands. I mean, we had hundreds of thousands of people watching our sermons at Mars Hill, and we put so much effort and time into figuring out how we can get to know those people by making them sign in first to tell us who they are and whether they were in a community group or not, and being able to, you know, create all those different touch points to be able to get to know them better.
But, you know, and I've used this analogy before. I'm not sure whether I did on the podcast, but, you know, it occurred to me there are historians who argue that one of the reasons, I mean, obviously the chief reason is Jesus and the Holy Spirit, but one of the reasons, practically speaking, that the gospel spread so quickly in the first century is because the Roman road system had been built. And the Apostle Paul could actually get from Thessalonica to Laodicea to Rome to Jerusalem in his lifetime, you know, otherwise that would have been impossible, right? It's just like today, you can get from New York to Paris in 6 hours on an airplane. That was impossible for most of human history. So the Roman road system
came along, and then
bingo. And the reason historians would argue objectively that the Protestant Reformation spread as widely as it did was, you know, Gutenberg had the press just really a generation earlier, and Luther figured out how to use it. And all of a sudden, Bibles went everywhere, and that exploded. So it was technology. It was the technology of Rhodes, the technology of the Gutenberg Bible and the printing press, and then the technology of the internet. And I think you're right. I think we're half asleep on the switch on this one.
Yeah. I mean, you know, the internet came out in the 80s. I was born in 82.
Yeah.
I've grown up with this, and I'm almost 35 years old, and we are yet to really use it.
That's a big lesson for me after my conversation with you today, is using it as one thing, using it well as the next. And it's completely different from what we're used to, which probably means that's why it's so intimidating.
Churches spend so much money on printing bulletins and silly stuff that we've just done forever. And we hear all the time, okay, I'm a small church, I don't have the resources to put behind this, I don't have the money to hire someone full time. But yet you have a full time admin who's sitting at the photocopier printing out 3,000 copies of a bulletin that nobody reads. Like, take the money you're printing down, the money you're paying that person, and put them in charge of your Facebook page and train them how to do that well. You know, like,
Or you've got that 10-hour a week church secretary, right, who's printing the bulletins for 75 people and returning email. Put that person, like, take those resources and put them on social.
The problem is they're just not prioritizing. It's not that they don't have the money. I mean, a church of 100 people has the resources to be able to do church online well and engage with those people well. I guarantee it. It's just a matter of learning how to do that well and to prioritize what you're doing. The pastor himself can reply to people 5 minutes a day.
I was going to say, if you're under 35, you know how to do this. Come on.
Yeah.
I mean, let's face it. If you're under 35, this is native language for you. And for those of us who are a little bit older, hey, you know, get with it. This is, I was not born in 1982. I was born in the 60s. But you can figure this out, really, honestly. The question is, do you want to? And a lot of people my age, over 50, they don't want to. They don't want to figure out. Like, they wouldn't even, a lot of my peers are like, what's a podcast? Well,
that's what I'm saying. They're too comfortable. They're too comfortable in the limits that are around them, because they have a building full of 1,000 people, and that's a pretty good accomplishment. That's a pretty heavy responsibility as well. Don't get me wrong, but you know, I don't know. I want more. I want to be able to reach more people than that, because it's too easy.
Yep. Couldn't agree more. So you've been working, you and Van Baird and a few others have started this thing called That Church Conference. Give us the skinny on what that's about, because you do multiple regional events where people who are interested in the kind of things we're talking about may want to check out.
Yeah, we started That Church Conference because really there wasn't much in this space as far as like practical teaching about digital communication. So, you know, we say we help digital communicators tell the best story that the church has to tell. So we do our conferences, our regional workshops, we do online training and provide resources online as well. We help churches make the most of digital and online so they can spread the gospel beyond their four walls. We think, you know, there's definitely a lot of areas that churches can go into, but we really believe that digital is the way that we can reach the most people and where the church is falling the most behind. And so that's where we concentrate is providing them training. And what we're learning is that churches are hungry for this stuff. Yeah. They know they can do better. They just don't know how, or they're too scared, or they think they can't because of money restrictions, or that's the way we've always done it type of thinking. And so we are really just jumping in there trying to disrupt this, to say you can do this, and here's the tools to do it.
Well, that's cool. And so what's a website for That Church Conference?
ThatCC.com.
ThatCC.com, which is great. Last question for you.
Yeah.
If people are like going to do some follows, and we'll link to all this in the show notes, but like a couple of churches, couple of leaders that you're like, hey, just pay attention to what they're doing.
Yeah. I mean, you know, I'm going to list people. You probably, you know, not the big names you've heard of, but I mentioned before the Rock Church. So Maggie Berrigan, she runs social media down there. Blair Farley runs all communications. He was at Mariners Church. Now he's at the Rock Church, and they are doing phenomenal work, just connecting with the local media and getting like great, good publicity for their church. I think they're just a great example of how to really engage with the community around them to broaden their reach, like within their zip code. And then they're also doing church online and things. And then Liquid Church up in New Jersey, with Ben Stapley is running the show there now, and they're doing great work just making the online experience a little more engaging and fun and casual, and not just a stream of their service, but really engaging with people back and forth and reaching out into the community. And they do a lot as well too with publicity and PR to say, here's what we're doing good in the community, and actually getting like national stories written about community outreach things they're doing. And so they just do a fantastic job at that. And they've had Dave Adamson, our mutual friend, from North Point, was the pastor up there for online, and then Kenny Jane, and now Ben Stapley. So they've had quite some heavy hitters running the show up there.
Yeah, for sure.
And frankly, Kerry, like, I admire what you're doing through this podcast and through the other one, just for leaders in general, and your blog, like even the messages in your church. I feel like you're playing the long game, and you're making a huge impact on leaders because of it. And just, I love that you're able to tackle tough topics, even like the one we're talking about today, the stuff we covered with Mars Hill in the past. Like, you're making a huge impact beyond just your Sunday messages each week. And you're doing it so simply by using a microphone and Skype, and it's grown tremendously. And you don't take it lightly. You engage with people. We've gotten to know each other on a personal level because of these couple podcasts we've done. And I think that's great. It shows your heart behind it. It is not just to say, here I am, look at me, I'm great, I teach leaders. It's, you actually care about the people you're engaging with. So,
oh, absolutely. You know, and I wish, I appreciate you saying that. And thank you for Not Usual Suspects too, in the Rock Church and Liquid Church. I mean, I think I know both churches, but yeah, they're not the typical suspects. So that gives us someone else to watch, which is really good. Yeah. We'll link to all that in the show notes. But I just want listeners, you know, because the podcast is growing like crazy. I don't know what is going on. And I'm very thankful for it. But if people only knew how easy it was, what the cost of entry was, I mean, it literally was a $79 WordPress theme that I bought from John Saddington. Remember when he ran, what was it called? Like a standard theme. It was standard theme too. Remember that? All you guys. And I bought it for $79 and I started blogging 3 days a week, and then millions of people showed up. And I had no idea. I had a crazy goal of 100,000. And then with the podcast too, you know, humble beginnings, but just like had a whole bunch in the bank and released every week. And literally cost of entry there was under $1,000. Now, obviously I've got a team now and blah, 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 blah. And it grew but like, you don't start with, well, I need 1 million people, or I need a team or whatever. I didn't have a team. I was the team. And, you know, yeah, I had a small team, but yeah, now it's grown. And obviously, when you get into larger numbers, you've got to scale it, and we have partners and the whole deal. But, you know, honestly, if I could do it, anybody could do it. Like, really, really. it's that simple. And I say that just to encourage a lot of you who are listening, going, there's no way that I could reach more people than we're currently reaching. Yes, there is. There really is. And so I appreciate that. Thank you. Thank you, Justin. And no matter how big or small your audience is, they're all people. And if you take them for granted, shame on you. You really shouldn't do that, you know?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. Well, Justin, this is great. People are going to want to connect with you as well. So where can they do that? Where can they find you online?
Yeah, easiest is just to go to Twitter, Justin J. Dean. You can go to justinjdean.com. By the time this airs, my book should officially be out too. So you can go to churchprbook.com. And I talk a lot about this. The book is mainly about how churches shouldn't be bland and should use digital technologies, and how PR really does matter to push all that out and spread the gospel further. And so that'll be out by the time this airs.
And what's a release date for the book?
You know, it was.
It was
January 31st, and we're having some last minute edits, but it should actually be out here in a few weeks. By the end of February is the goal.
Okay, so February 2017, and by the time this hits the air, you'll be able to get it. We'll link to it in the show notes. Tell us again the name of the book.
It's PR Matters, so it's a survival guide for church communicators.
Excellent. And so, and that's kind of all of us who lead. We are all communicators at one level or another, so make sure you guys check that out.
And that's the whole theory, is that, you know, we're all in PR whether we want to be or not. Like, everything we do and say is perceived by others in a certain way. It's just a matter of what we do with that to help them align that with reality. So
great. Hey, Justin, thank you so much, my friend.
Thank you, Carrie. Appreciate it.
Well, I just want you to think, you know, if you've gone through the last couple of weeks and you're like, I don't know about church and technology. Hey, listen, you are listening to a podcast. Think about how this has impacted you, and think about how you can impact people that you haven't met and people who live in your city, live in your region. And I just want to thank Justin and Steve for doing this little series. We're on to new waters next week, sitting down with Bob and Maria Goff. Again, subscribers, you'll get this automatically, and you can subscribe for free today. Here's a little excerpt from my conversation with Bob and Maria.
What I want to do is have things in common in our marriage, and to say, so for instance, I'll give you an example. Like, I bet it's been 2.5 years ago that I sold my car. And so we've been just driving around in the same Suburban we used to drop the kids off in kindergarten. But I could probably scrape together enough money for a Prius. And I'm not trying to go green. What I'm trying to do is have one more thing in common with the person I love. And so
you have one car and you share it.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah.
So what if you just say, we just want to have more things in common? Literally, if Maria wanted to make pizzas, I'd grow tomatoes.
Right.
Whatever it is. Fine. And the same thing with your kids. And literally, you can go down the roll call and say, okay, what's Lindsay up to right now? And is there any way I could have one more thing in common with her or support that? Or?
Well, that's going to be a lot of fun next week. And we got some great stuff coming up this summer as well. So want to also let you know that the High Impact Leader course is coming back. So if you haven't gone to thehighimpactleader.com yet, make sure you do that and just sign up for the waiting list. And that way you won't miss the release. We're going to open up the course for new registrations first week in May, and then we're going to close it right after that. And then it's going to go away for a while. So we have heard so many great stories about what that productivity course has done in leaders' life. And basically, it's everything that I have learned over the last decade in how to manage my time, my energy, and my resources and priorities so that I can have a higher impact in my leadership. And I hope it helps you as well. So go to thehighimpactleader.com. Back next week with a fresh episode. Thanks to Trained Up and fullyfunded.cc. And we'll see you then. In the meantime, have an amazing week. And I really do hope that our time together today has helped you lead like never before.
You've been listening to the Kerry Newhoff Leadership Podcast. Join us next time for more insights on leadership, change, and personal growth to help you lead like never before.